Welcome to A Little Too Quiet, the Ferndale Library Podcast, brought to you by the Friends of the Ferndale Library. We're coming to you from downtown Ferndale, just a mile north of Detroit, Michigan. My name's Jeff Milo, and I'm here with my producer, Kelly Bennett. We're also joined by a very special guest, author Kathy Koja, prolific writer. Most recent work was Christopher Wilde, but she has a short story collection coming out soon called Velocities. We're also going to be talking about that. And I think we're going to be talking about her immersive theater company as well. We thank you for checking out this podcast. Kathy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Let's jump into it. First of all, it's very exciting news that you have this short story collection coming out later this year.
Right. It is coming out in April.
Yeah.
From Meerkat Press. It's called Velocities.
Terrific.
And it's a collection of short fiction that I didn't realize was quite so thematically linked mm-hmm. as it is until I started putting the table of contents in order.
Do you think your brain was doing the connective work for you subconsciously?
I hope so. I hope that happens all the time.
I think it might. I should say an award-winning author here in the Ferndale Library. Very excited. Winner of the Bram Stoker Award and the Locust Award and something called the Death Realm Award.
And a finalist for the Philip K. Dick Award.
Heck yeah.
And the Parents' Choice Award and the Kids in Nature's Defense Award. I'm very proud of my awards for my YA books, especially for Buddha Boy and for Stray Dog.
Yeah, that's right. A humanitarian for sure. Supporter of animal rights.
Big supporter of animal rights.
Thrown together some events here locally, the Cat Cabaret.
Absolutely. It was very fun to support the Cat Fae and the Cats of Ferndale. So we had a great time that night. The High Strung, I believe, closed out our evening.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. A friend of the show, Josh Mallon, was a guest on this podcast. So that's great. But people might see that you're a humanitarian who loves animals, but then you're often categorized in the horror genre.
I am.
Yeah.
But it's mostly violence against people. Well,
let's talk about that. I mean, you won the Bram Stoker Award, your breakout novel, Cypher. But let's go way back, like, to your formative moments, you know, when you knew you loved writing, when you knew it would become your life.
I know it is kind of a cliche to say this, but it is also true. I have been writing since I was about 4 years old.
Oh, great.
So once I understood that there were such things as books mm-hmm. and you could read them, I started to write them.
That's
they
great.
Were extremely short, but action-packed.
So you just knew early. The light bulb went on, so to speak.
The light bulb went on. It's been on ever since.
What about, do you remember, I guess, your first formative moment with a book then? Because if you were writing, that coincides right with your ability to start reading, too. So, you know, were there books in your childhood that really had an impact on you?
I grew up with a lot of books, and the book that I remember, and this is a library story too. I grew up on the East Side.
We love library stories on this podcast.
In Roseville, which is a little suburb. And the public library had two kinds of cards. You could have the grown-up card and you could have the kid card. Mm-hmm. And there was a book that I kept taking out from that library over and over and over again as a child called Tyke. A little mutt.
Okay.
Okay. And it's fellow mutt. His name's Tyke.
Aww.
He's so great. And he has all these adventures. And, you know, at the end, it looks like he's going to be kicked to the curb, but he's totally not. Spoiler alert. He's fine. But it was this great book. And I took it out so many times. And one day I went and it was gone.
Did they weed it from the collection?
They weeded it from the collection. And I was crushed. Oh, I know. It's horrible. But it has a happy ending.
Okay.
Then one day I grew up and was a large grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And for the holidays, my husband, Rick Leader, got me that book, that edition. I opened the package and burst into tears.
I believe it.
I was so happy.
I believe it, especially if it's the version that we are looking at right now, which we should share a link to on the show notes because it is an adorable dog. But that's a deep connection with a book.
It totally was.
And also thanks to libraries, you could get it every time you wanted it.
That's right. Absolutely. And I remember being really proud, too, when I could get the grown-up card
yeah.
and start accessing the grown-up collection, too. Mm-hmm. So that was a thing.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I did want to go back. So we're sort of marking an anniversary of Cypher, and that was your breakout book. Could you talk about that and how long it took you to write it and describe about, you know, what inspired it and how you plotted it out?
Well, what is really great also about Cypher is that it is coming out again.
That's right.
And it will be reissued, reprinted in English. It's been reprinted many times in other languages and by other publishers. But Meerkat Press is also bringing out the Cypher in fall of 2020. So I'm excited to see it come back into print in English. There is an ebook edition that's robustly, you know, available, but it's nice to have it in print as well. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really pinpoint where anything starts. Everything starts for me with a character. So the character of Nicholas actually came in sideways from something else that I was working on. Mm-hmm. And that original project kind of fell by the wayside, but Nicholas's voice was strong. And I kept him as a character, and Nakota, his unbelievable girlfriend, mm-hmm. also, he and she were the characters that I saw, and the story kind of took over from there. The original title of the book was The Fun Hole, mm-hmm. and that was changed by the publisher for various reasons.
Sounds risque.
Nobody knew what to make of it. Mm-hmm. And it does sound risque. And they ended up choosing the title of Cypher. That was not my choice. But in some ways, I have grown to understand that title better, because so much of what this novel is about is emptiness. And the conceit is this couple finds what seems to be some kind of interdimensional black hole, mm-hmm. or some kind of hole in their crappy apartment building. Mm-hmm. And they start visiting it and they start putting things in it to see what will happen. And that void, it's very difficult to be nothing. It's very difficult to have something that's like absolutely nothing. So that in itself is, I think, scares people. It scares me.
Yeah, that's a different kind of horror. It's not the traditional, you know, ghosts or monsters.
Very much so. Yeah. And I think it, because it is so uncompromisingly nothing, mm-hmm. we're free to interpret it any way we want. Mm-hmm. And I've had people tell me after reading that book, one person memorably came up and said, "I'm afraid of all my kitchen cupboards now. I don't know why, but I really don't like to be alone in the kitchen, and I shut all the doors."
It's very interesting, you know, but having met you, even if you're exploring a darkness in your books, you're a bright and optimistic person though.
I think it's especially essential in these times that, and hopefully in the future, things are getting better. But in this quasi moment, mm-hmm. I think it's essential to remember that joy is possible,
yeah.
and that joy is what will keep us going.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the way in which you write and just your voice, which is so powerful, just really quickly about, because I had mentioned this earlier off mic, your characters, you don't seem to be afraid of ever creating a character or a protagonist who isn't perfect, who is flawed, who is struggling, who isn't someone that, who frankly, someone who isn't a cipher that the reader can project themselves on. It's a character that this reader's going to have to take as is.
They're pretty definite. And I think that is how we live. I mean, we meet people and people meet us and we all are who we are.
Yeah.
And that's how the characters, I mean, it sounds so tweed, they just present themselves to me. Mm-hmm. I can't do anything about it. But they just present themselves to me and I can't do anything about it.
That's right.
I can continue to investigate and to excavate their personalities. Hopefully I'm doing that through the course of the book, yeah. but they are what they are.
Yeah, right on. And so I've read a lot of reviews of your books and I feel like the word feverish comes up a lot. And it's specifically in describing your writing, not even necessarily the plot of the characters, feverish and dreamlike, sort of what you're able to create. And somewhat, there's just all these intensive descriptors. So if that's what it's like for these reviewers to get through it, what is the creative process like for you? Is it very feverish and extreme?
I wouldn't say extreme. Mm-hmm. Rhythm is very important to me. rhythm in, when I read for voice. I'll read anything if the voice appeals to me.
Yeah.
It's, I don't care what it is. That's what I'm reading for. And it's hard for me to, conversely, it's hard to enjoy something that's like a ripping good narrative, but it's in a not a, then I want to read it.
Mm-hmm.
So the rhythm of things, the way things sound, the way punctuation is, I'm sure I'm a giant pain in the ass to all copy editors everywhere because my punctuation is very different because it's there for specific reasons. It's, you know, and not that it isn't in every book, but it's meant to create and maintain that flow and rhythm. And without that, it would not read the same. It would not be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, part of being a writer, words are fun.
Truly.
Words are great, mm-hmm. right? And the English language in particular, because it's such a beautiful mongrel, dare we say immigrant language, mm-hmm. ongoing and growing language, mm-hmm. it offers you so many different tools and button hooks and smiley stickers, and there's all these things you can do with it. Why would you not want to use all those smiley
right.
button
or,
hooks?
Or how about this? Play all the notes.
Play all the notes.
Musicality.
Right.
You know, and this might be the best segue because you describe flow and rhythm and you have a very musicality-ness to your narrative. And, you know, we should bring up that there is this immersive theater company called Nerve, and we have this music that we do want to sample here. Can you tell us about that? Maybe even lead us towards something you're working on called Dark Factory.
Right. Well, one of the things that Dark Factory is totally about is the rhythm not only of music, but of life in all its permutations mm-hmm. and across all kinds of inner and outer dimensions. So
technically, we're talking about a book, but I'm making air quotes.
Right. It's a narrative. It's a narrative experience. I'm calling it immersive fiction because it will be experienced as words, but it has other components as
okay.
well. And one of those is sound.
Right. And there's a song you wanted us to listen to for a second too as well. Let me just get that up here. It is we would say in the techno genre. Is that correct?
It is.
Yeah.
Green Velvet is the artist.
Okay.
And yeah, I won't gild the lily.
Destination Unknown. Just let that techno music play as we continue talking to Kathy Koja here. But yeah, tell us a little bit more about Dark Factory and I guess your whole other sort of creative outlet. There is, I guess your writing life and your theater life sort of just commingle.
Yes, they are very much, one was quite an organic outgrowth of the other. When I wrote the first of the Under the Poppy trilogy, the book called Under the Poppy,
mm-hmm.
I knew that I wanted to create a book trailer for it and I didn't know how to do this. So I started talking to a lot of very creative and wonderful people who were able to put me on the good foot. And we made this amazing trailer, which is really fun. Under the Poppy takes place in a Victorian brothel with puppets. And you can't have any more fun than that. You just can't.
Right.
And the idea of recreating the narrative experience in with puppetry, with live actors, with visuals, with music.
Yeah.
A composer, Joe Stacey, who I love a lot, has written a bunch of music for the Poppy. And the more I started working on that, I realized I wanted to do a live, real-world, immersive adaptation of the book. And I did that, and I just couldn't stop doing them because they were so fun.
That's great. See the book come to life like that.
And what's really interesting, and you and I have talked a little bit about this before, it's sort of like when I'm present at one of the events and watching people experience what's happening, it's like watching them read.
Yeah.
And you get to see their responses, which is something a writer never gets to have. It's the kind of feedback you just don't get.
That's got to be a little exhilarating.
Oh, it's fabulous. Yeah. And that they will come up with interpretations, or they will use the experience in their own ways, in ways I could never have dreamed of. Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best. So I'm trying to take that a step further with Dark Factory. And I'm still in the hot and heavy creation stages with both the narrative and the collaborators that I'm working with. But what I want this to be, I would like to try to make that kind of experience as available to everyone who interacts with the narrative as possible. You need not be present to win. I hope to provide as close as I can to give the experience of being in this club, Dark Factory, in this place where reality is malleable to everyone who comes to the narrative.
Mm-hmm. And just as a tangential thought, I mean, we are consuming a lot of content these days, but it's usually on our screens and visual, but we're not out at theater enough anymore.
Oh, for sure. And I think too, when we are, I think having a tactile, and I see that in I read a lot about immersive events and about AR and VR experiences as well. And to be able to be in a place, it's the difference between being in a club or listening to the music at home. It's not quite the same, because there is the component of the other bodies and sensibilities and energy present with you.
Yes.
And that's, you really can't get that any other way.
I just have to remark before I go into my next question, we talked about cats, and then we talked about horror novels, and then we brought in some techno, and then we back to the Victorian era. We've been all over the place here. But the short story collection, Velocities, was just put up on a list of anticipated horror novels of the next year.
Yes, I was very pleased.
Very exciting.
To see it in good company.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that people who may not have ever read any of my stuff might, if they pick up Velocities and read it, the first taste is free. It might, it might be a gateway drug to the rest of it. What is interesting, not only about Velocities, but about what you just said about going from here to there.
Yeah.
I work in a lot of different genres, and there are people who only know my young adult work. I've done seven or eight novels for FSG, YA novels, and Farrah Straus. And some people only know my horror novels. Some people only know the Under the Poppy books. Christopher Wilde came out of left field for everybody. They're like, you are writing. And Christopher Wilde is a very, I would like to talk about that book for a second.
Yes, of course. I remember reading that and kind of swooning.
Christopher Marlowe is a really underappreciated writer to me. And he was the precursor to, let's put it this way, Shakespeare studied him quite closely and learned a lot. And I had known nothing about him. And then I read Anthony Burgess's A Dead Man in Deptford, which was like, talk about the voice just takes you over. Burgess is an angel writer, and most people would know him from Clockwork Orange.
But of course.
He's done, a ton of stuff. And reading that book made me want to know more about Marlowe. And knowing more about Marlowe, I said, oh, I have to write a book too. I mean, I just have to. And that was a challenge, because it's the first time that I had ever worked with a real person, not a person that I was getting to make everything up and could excavate. And I still had to excavate his personality to write the book, but you feel you have a different responsibility, because this is a real person.
Did you feel like you were living with him for a while?
I wish. but there was that kind of responsibility added on to the responsibility of, and because he's the kind of writer who the people who love him a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, when they're reading that book, they're going to be, you know, checking you to make sure you're hitting all the spots that you should hit. And, but it was a challenge, and I like to be challenged in everything that I do. Velocities was a different challenge. I have a lot of short fiction, mm-hmm. and I had to really sit down and think, what do I want to include in this and why?
Yeah.
And I'd had a previous collection quite a while ago called Extremities, mm-hmm. and that was easier to put together. This one was more of a challenge, and I really wanted that thematic through line, mm-hmm. for people. And I hope my brain did do that good work, and I hope it is there. A piece of short fiction is, it's almost the perfect reading and writing experience, because you get in, you get out, you do exactly what you have to do. There's no fat, there's no filler, there's no nothing. You do your thing and get out. And a really good short story will stay with you. It's like a punch in the face, but in like a really good punch.
Yeah. Right? I've heard others describe it as more challenging because they have to, there's no fat to chew.
There's no room for mistakes. Yeah. There's no right. And there shouldn't be. I mean, there should be nothing in Shirley Jackson, who's one of the greatest American short fiction writers ever. Everyone knows The Lottery, but she has written a ton of short pieces that are incredibly economical and incredibly powerful. And she wrote, I guess they began life as actual notes for her daughter, Sarah, called Notes for a Young Writer. And it's at the end of her last published collection called Come Along With Me. Mm-hmm. And it's about 19 paragraphs, and it is a masterclass of short, especially for short fiction, saying you don't need this, you don't need that, you don't. I learned so much from reading that, because so much of what the writer is doing is collaborative with the reader. I invite and expect the readers to bring this whole wealth of their information, their taste, their sensibility. Everything is coming to this piece of fiction and is meeting me more than halfway. And the more they bring, the better time they're going to have. So I don't want to put in anything that they don't need. They are perfectly capable of imagining just about anything with the right prompts.
That's great. Because my intention was to also ask you about, because you kind of touched on it, the genres that you work in, you know, and that insight that you just shared must inform your approach. Whether it's
absolutely.
Whether I'm Kathy in young adult mode or horror mode or Marlowe mode.
Right, right. And writing YA was almost a jumpstart discipline, mm-hmm. because you really have to be economical. Mm-hmm. You do not want to bore your young readers, because right. they will throw the book down. And they should, right? I mean, I've done a lot of school presentations, and the kids will straight up tell you, you know, what they liked, what they didn't like. And one of my books, in fact, my first YA called Stray Dog, there was a discussion at one of the school visits about whether the book should end as it ended or as we would like it to end.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids just took over and started, and half of them were saying, no, you should show the way things should be, because then that will, you know, encourage people to do the right thing. And others were saying, no, you have to show it the way it is, because people need to know how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who thinks writing for younger people is easier, or that you're talking down to them, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's absurd. They are so smart and so fearless. Mm-hmm. And they will also... I was on a panel discussion once in Minneapolis about children's literature, where an actual child was on the panel.
Oh.
A young man of about 9 or 10. And I don't even remember what the question was, but we all gave our answers. And he said, Well, you know, I think all books that are published are good, because if they weren't good, someone wouldn't let them be published, right?
Oh.
Whoa, dead silence, right? Everyone's like, oh, wow. Okay.
Didn't think about that.
And how to say this without, I mean, it's like, you're right. That's right. What it should be.
Right.
Right. But if you have a reader like that reading you, you had better bring your A-plus right. game, right?
Right. And genres of, at the end of the day, it's a construct. It's a category that's subjectively thrust upon whatever you do anyway. You can't think about what that is before you get started.
This is me nodding energetically. Yeah, yeah, there is no, it's, you can understand, because that's the first thing people, that you ask about anything. Well, yeah. What is it like? Yeah. What is it like? So you can categorize it for yourself.
Right.
But yeah, it's in the end, it's a construct. It's, yeah. And a lot of it is also about marketing, so things can be correctly presented to someone who might want to purchase them, mm-hmm. which, you know, I get it, that people need to know, and especially now when there's like this fire hose of information coming at us at all times.
Mm-hmm.
We need, although I do think now that because there is this fire hose of information, people's word of mouth, like a librarian, mm-hmm. like a literature consumer, if a friend says to me, Kathy, read this book, I'm a whole lot more likely to read this book than if I get 50,000 emails saying, oh, blah.
We've talked about that as being the value of a library experience, of going to the reference desk and having the librarian
literally
hand
take you,
something.
Right, yeah. And go, here, read, try this.
Yeah.
Because you already trust their curation, right?
Yeah, there's like a bit of a golden ticket situation there. They're showing you a world that they think you're going to love, and you're primed, I guess.
And even if it doesn't work out, like a bad blind date where you go, really, you thought I would, what bad thoughts do you have about me that you would think I would enjoy this really horrible book?
Right.
Even then, it's interesting, because there's still some connection going on, whether or not you made a connection with the book or not, that person did. And they thought you would like this horrible, horrible book. And
yeah.
Then you can no longer be friends and everything's ruined. But it's good to know.
Let's transition into something a little heavier, or a little lighter. This idea of transcendence that goes through your books, and exploring that idea with a book like Strange Angels, too. And your characters seeking transcendence, or different forms of transcendence. Can you talk about that?
I think that's something that we're all doing all the time, maybe without naming it mm-hmm. as such. I think we are all looking not necessarily to have more, but to be more. And if we're not, I think we kind of feel that.
I think if people hear the word, they might think Buddhism, but it's, you're not specifically saying one transcendence or another.
No, and it has nothing to do for me with mm-hmm. any kind of religious context. It's more about becoming more of what you are. It's like when you meet someone who calls something out in you that you didn't know was there, or you're tasked to do something and you, I don't know if I can do this, but you do it.
Yeah.
And you realize, not only did I do this, I'm really good at this.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Those are transcendent moments.
It's like a phantom limb suddenly coming to life.
Right.
You're like, it's tangible now.
Oh, I didn't even know I could do that. I didn't even know that I liked that. I didn't even, it's like being a child and, you know, trying some food for the first time and going, oh, this is so good. Oh my God, how did I not know that peanut butter was great? You know, but it is, until you transcend, until you cross whatever barrier was between you and it,
mm-hmm.
you don't know. Mm-hmm. And it can work. I think Strange Angels is a good example. That is a book about a man who is seeking a kind of transcendence by inserting himself in the life of an artist who is psychologically challenged,
mm-hmm.
and which is an enormously selfish and ruinous thing to do. And that's kind of a false transcendence when you're trying to use somebody else, right, to do the hard work for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, to piggyback that. I don't think anybody can do that, thankfully. You
right,
know.
Right. But then going back to your creative process, it's not, that might not be a conscious thing either, where you're making, a plot is coming to you and you're like, okay, but where's the transcendence factor?
It
materialize.
Yeah, no. And I have a general idea of where things are going,
mm-hmm.
except and actually, except with Dark Factory, I had the characters. I had a character that I, Ari, who I liked very much, and I knew that Ari was pivotal to the story, but that was really all that I knew. And a lot of Dark Factory was about transcending, seriously, the ways that I thought the book was going as opposed to the way it wanted to go, where the narrative was. And I should know better by now. I've been doing this for a while. But I really thought it was doing one thing and it was doing something else. Yeah. And so it took a while for me to get out of the way and let it come out, let it flow.
We mentioned that you have been doing this for a while. Do you find that you have come to appreciate the whole arc of the process? Because you also mentioned off mic you're in the editing realms now, and that can't be fun. But it's a whole arc from it comes in your brain, you write it, edit it, put it out. Do you enjoy it all, the ride, or is there one aspect you like more than anything?
Heck no. No, what made me appreciate it more was being a producer.
Okay.
And I produce and direct the live immersive experiences that I do. And being a producer, you want to talk about a thankless task. My hat is off to every producer everywhere, because every problem is yours to fix.
And you need to do a magic trick.
And none of the glory is yours, right? Mm-hmm. No one. There's a great line, and I don't remember who said this, but it's, the world doesn't want to hear about labor pains. It only wants to see the baby. Mm. And no one wants to know how hard it was for you to put the show on and what you had to do and da 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 da. I'll tell one story that illustrates that as a process. Mm-hmm. I was doing a version of Marlowe's Dr. Faustus, and I had a venue set, and I was on the verge of signing the check for it, and something came flying out of left field that ruined it all. Okay, mm-hmm. So I can't use that venue. Now I have a pounding headache, and what am I going to do? I mean, what am I going to do? I have my cast. I have my time booked. I have everything. But now I don't have a place to have this show. What am I going to do? So one of the performers said to me, why don't you check out the Unitarian Church on Cass? They're really cool. And they have like an event space that maybe we could use. I said, all right. So I went to the Unitarian Church on Cass, and they showed me their event space, and it was nice, but it was nothing that I could use. I'm like, oh, wow, this is bad. Okay, well, thank you very much. And thanks. And it's a really beautiful sanctuary. And they're like, oh, we rent that too.
Hey.
I know. Like, wait, I can. It's like, you know, it's a devil play, right? They're like, oh, we're Unitarians. We don't care. So I did my devil play in a church, and it was fantastic. There could not have been a better venue. Mm-hmm. But because I was so fixated on the wrong thing, and I couldn't produce what I needed to do until I got out of the way and let the process take over. So yeah. That's what gives me more of an appreciation for the process itself, because sometimes the troubles and the problems are the thing that put you where you needed to be.
Yeah. And I'm going to ramble my way into making something out of this, because I think that the fulfillment factor for you is the connection that the reader will make. And that kind of ties into, as we like to tie into on this podcast, what libraries are doing every day.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got to see that now. It's like, even if it's a reference librarian handing them Under the Poppy, they've made a connection.
Oh, absolutely. And that they're coming into the space at all is saying something. They're like, I'm a huge library user. I do interlibrary loans. Like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Melcat is like my best friend. I'm constantly getting books. And the fact that, and it blows me away every time. And my home library is the Berkeley Library, and they all know me by name.
Yeah. In terms of what's available.
The fact that you can go and get this book, get this narrative, get this thing, whatever, this piece of research. We can get a lot of stuff online, and that is awesome. But sometimes you need the actual book.
Right.
And especially for Dark Factory, I was researching a lot, and I don't know what the term for it is, books that have unusual typography, because I wanted to see if that was something I wanted to include in this mix.
Okay.
And they found books. I asked people on Twitter, what kind of books, what should I be looking at? And people gave me this giant long rec list, and they filled it up. And I was able to see all those books, physically hold them in my hand and read. I mean, that's kind of a miracle. I think libraries are really part of what civilization is supposed to be about, And yeah. that is not hyperbole. I think if we don't have the sharing, the free sharing of information, person to person, we don't, we are really on thin ice
yeah.
as a and civilization.
Another thing we were talking about earlier, it could be the future of how our readers stay connected to just the books. You know, yes. if they don't want to go buy it offline or they don't want to go to a bookstore, their library is going to be their best spot. So,
and that's a good place. That's like the free zone where you can say, well, I'm going to try this and see,
yeah.
do I like it? Is this something that I really want mm-hmm. in my life, in my library, in my brain? Do I want this? The library, and because libraries are also a safe place for ideas.
Yeah.
All ideas can be had here.
We could do immersive theater here, maybe.
We could do immersive theater here.
That would
here.
Be exciting.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah, so we're excited about Velocities. And you're looking ahead to another year, and now another decade. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good.
Yeah.
I think, and this is where we come back to joy, I think because times are difficult now, uniquely difficult in some ways, that we need places of play, we need places of intellectual enjoyment and challenge, and we need that exchange more than ever. And right, I without readers, a book, a narrative is nothing,
yeah.
right? It's just, it's literally nothing. I used to do that in my school visits, and I would take a copy of Buddha Boy and go, this book is nothing, and I'd throw it on the ground, and the kids would go, say, but without you, you know, without you guys to read it.
Right.
It really isn't anything.
It's what you put inside of it, right?
It's the exchange.
Yeah.
It's the exchange.
Yeah.
Without readers, there are no writers. There's no point.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, I'm a big fan. And I have to say, it's one thing to go to a conventional author event and meet the author, but it's one thing to see they have a new story coming out. It's something that they've poured their heart and soul into. And then you'll also get to see it interactively performed with human beings. It comes to life in front of you. That's a great step to take.
It's just so much fun. It's not only fun for me and for the collaborative artists that I work with. It's fun to exchange that energy and mm-hmm. see how people react and what they take away from it. And there really isn't anything like that. There isn't. It's a type of play. And I think play is paramount. Play is really important. We forget that as adults. Kids mm-hmm. know it naturally. Animals know it naturally. Mm-hmm. Adults forget. And we need it just as much.
Yeah.
And I think when you give people, that's what I love about immersive events. When you give people permission to give themselves permission
yeah.
to play, you will see amazing things.
Yes. Yeah. Let your guard down a little bit. Yeah.
Open, you know, transcend a little bit. You will surprise yourself by what comes out.
I mean, another quick plug. That's something we see here when we have live music events. The fact that people are encountering music in a library, they already think that's unconventional enough, and it's very refreshing. That being said, we thank you so much for your time here at Kathy Koja. We're going to link to that awesome techno song we listened to in the middle of this podcast in the show notes, as well as, was it Tyke? What's the dog?
Tyke the Little Mutt.
Tyke the Little Mutt. We'll get that picture in there, as well as shout out to Melcat, the Michigan Electronic Library.
Woo, woo.
That is another episode of A Little Too Quiet. I really enjoyed our conversation, Kathy.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Yes, and you have been listening to us on one of those streaming services. If you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave a rating or a review. It will help us find more listeners. This is A Little Too Quiet, the Ferndale Library podcast, brought to you by the Friends of the Ferndale Library. If you really want to support this podcast, you could just donate to the Friends, ferndalefriends.org. My name's Jeff Milo, and I've been joined by my producer, Kelly Bennett, as well as the author here, the local author, Kathy Koja. The music you've been hearing at the beginning and closing of this is by John Duffy. You can find us online. We'll be on YouTube as well as those other major streaming services like Spotify. Hopefully you're digging this show. Tell your friends about it. Thanks for listening.